Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of August, 2015. Welcome to episode 3 of our 3-episode test market for this hot new podcast concept. And that concept is to just have a brief chat about what comics I read last month, or at least the comics that were listed on the What I Read blog posts that hit the 5 Saturdays of August. Those blog posts are at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com. And I regularly repost them on Facebook and in Twitter, so you can find those. Those posts are not exactly spoilers for this podcast, since those are just lists, and there's a little more review, a little more critique, a little more discussion here on the podcast. But first, a little feedback. The Irredeemable Shag left a comment on the last episode. Good news! I heard from the network, and the Nielsen ratings are looking good. Your show might be picked up for a full season, or at least a second summer season. The not-so-great news is the network is shopping around for a more engaging host. I hear Ryan Daly stopped by the network and recorded an audition tape. Sorry to be the one to break it to you. Just wanted to be sure you heard it from a friend first. Well, you guys know the expression. With friends like Shag, who needs deranged enemies out for your blood? Fortunately, Ryan Daly has his hands full wrangling guests for the Secret Origins podcast and then trying to make sense of Diablo Frank's weekly manifesto. Feedback. So I think my gig as host of this show is safe for now. Plus, Ryan Daly left feedback about the show on the Facebook page. I didn't read it, but I'm sure it was pretty positive. You know, I just got that notification, but let me pull it up now. Here it is. New episode is every bit as wretched as the last, Professor. Points for consistency, I suppose. Hey, wait a minute. Well, let's go back to Shag's email, which I can't believe I just said. He did add that the new 52 Animal Man was fantastic, which does go to show that when his meds kick in, or wear off, it's hard to tell which, he can sometimes stumble into coherent comments. Daniel Butcher reported being surprised by Gotham Academy. I am clearly the outlier on that one. I'm the only person I know who has read it and hasn't fallen in love with it. And Canada's Rob Lance thanked me for the kind words I said about him. Be prepared, Rob. There's more where that came from in about 15 minutes. Darren Sutherland sent in feedback on that episode as well. Hi, Professor Allen, listening to CRJ, Episode 2, and you're talking about the Maze Agency, yet another independent comic we completely agree about, Uncanny. As I've mentioned before, mysteries are actually my favorite genre for books, film, and TV, and the Maze Agency was a great mystery comic that Ruth and I loved and read regularly. Thanks, Darren. I really appreciate that. I've just recently become acquainted with Darren and Ruth, and as he said, our tastes and interests are eerily similar. The Sutherlands host the excellent Trekker Talk podcast, by the way. They also talked about meeting Paul Cornell at a Doctor Who convention, and how he and Stephen Moffat respect each other quite a bit, even though they have somewhat different worldviews and outlooks. Very interesting. Again, to everyone, thanks. I really do appreciate the feedback, you know, most of it. But on to the books I read in August. As I did in the prior episodes, I'm going to categorize the books that I cover here. First are issues that I read specifically for podcast appearances, the homework books. And a bunch of comics fit into that category more than any other month so far, including El Diablo 16. This one was for Quarterbin 58. It was the last issue of that title, and I picked it up having no idea what the storyline was, and despite having no preconceptions, it was not at all what I was expecting. That one is discussed in full on Quarterbin Podcast 58. Also, Black Hawk 122. I mentioned an episode or two back of this show that I'd picked up an old copy of Our Fighting Forces and had penciled in that book for Veterans Day. But this one, this Black Hawk 122, has bumped that other one out to next year at least. This is by far the oldest book I have ever paid 25 cents for, being from 1958, and all things considered, in pretty good condition. It has its cover, all the pages are relatively crisp, shocking that it was not totally falling apart, and shocking that it was in the 25-cent bin at half-price books. I have been making plans on how to cover this issue for Veterans Day on a quarter-bin special in a few months. No spoilers, but guests will be involved. Thor 337. This is the first issue of the Walt Simonson run, and I talked about it with Blaine Dowler for an upcoming episode of his unofficial Greatest 75 Marvels Countdown podcast that should be out in early October if I did my math right. No spoilers, but we both agree that it deserved to be on that list. I read my issue out of the first trade paperback of the Marvel Visionaries collection of Simonson's run, and for that podcast, I did not read beyond 337, the first one, but after reading about it and talking about the issue with Blaine, I just rolled through the rest of that trade. So I'm sort of counting those issues here in this category, and that would be not just 337, but then 338 through 348. Great stuff. Not to repeat what's in that upcoming episode of Blaine's show, but the Simonson run is one of the best in Marvel history, and it really gets off to a great start, including the introduction of the great and noble character of Beta Ray Bill. For Ryan Daly's Secret Origins podcast, I read issues 16 and 17 of, well, Secret Origins, because I'm going to be on episode 16 and 17 of that podcast. Actually, I only read half of issue 17, the Adam Strange part, because of the, let's just say the manner in which I acquired the pages for that story, but let's move on. Let's not dwell there. Issue 16 included a Warlord origin, which is what Ryan and I talked about for that episode. No spoilers, but the less said about that story, the better. That issue also included an Hourman origin and a one-page Mazing Man origin. No spoilers, but each of those contained more action than the Warlord story. Yes, the one-page Mazing Man origin had more action than the Warlord story. As prep for that recording with Ryan, I also read Warlord 91. The original run of that title, when Mike Grell was doing it, did not include an origin beyond Travis Morgan flying over the Arctic and flying through a hole in the earth to land in Barsoom and find Deja Thoris. No, wait, that's John Carter. I mean, he lands in Skartaris and finds Terra. But in this issue, 91, there's a childhood story that fills in some of the biography, and that's the issue, Warlord 91, that's actually adapted in Secret Origins 16. The big difference is that stuff actually happens in Warlord 91. I also went through my Quarterman database and found that I had Secret Origins 12, featuring the Challengers of the Unknown and the Golden Age Fury. And out of respect for Ryan and for his show, and so he doesn't take Shag's advice and conduct a hostile takeover on this show, I read it and then removed it from the Quarterbin database. Don't worry, there are still plenty of books to be covered on the Quarterbin show. I am a longtime fan of the Challengers, and actually thought the retelling of the origin there was pretty good, and the Golden Age Fury story was entertaining enough as well. That Secret Origins episode, episode 12, is out, and was pretty good. Greg Arujo was on to talk about Fury, and Doug Zawissa joined Ryan to talk about Challengers. Good podcast, good episode. There are also a handful of new books that Emily and I are reading off the shelves, and this category is also longer than it has been in any of the past two episodes of this podcast. Em picked up a new book for us, and there was also an annual, so it was five new books in all. The Gotham by Midnight annual came out the fifth week of July, but based on my arcane rules, it counts here in the August podcast. This was a very good one-off, with Detective Corrigan and his crew, and an appearance by the Spectre, taking on the Gentleman Ghost. It was a good story, and it really wrapped up that story nicely, although they seem to be implying that Gentleman Ghost could be returning to the main title soon. And just between us, that would be fine with me. Gotham by Midnight 8 picks up the story of the internal affairs investigation of the Midnight Shift, with IA making Corrigan's life pretty miserable. And at the same time, there's some crazy anger-rage thing happening in Gotham. Solid issue, nice moving back and forth between the A and B stories, and actually showed how this anger-rage monster or spirit or whatever it was affecting the relationships on the squad and is actually feeding the internal affairs side of the story. And we're getting Corrigan's consequences to him becoming the Spectre, both consequences to him and to those around him. It was a solid, solid comic. In Starfire 3, Corey is wrapping up her rescue mission in the aftermath of the hurricane, and we finally get an enemy for her to fight by the end, and Starfire also gets a super surprise new ally. So this one got, I guess, a little more serious, but the light touch was still there, and I hope that the balance between fun and good superhero fighting continues as the series rolls on. Constantine the Hellblazer 3, we get some flashbacks to John's punk rock past, his early dabblings with the occult, and how that is impacting a current case he's involved in, of how his ghostly friends keep dying, which should be impossible, being that they're already dead. So this pushed the plot forward a little bit, but added a lot of good character stuff as well. So it was a good middle issue in what I assume will be a 5 or 6 or 7 issue story arc. The new book that Emily picked up when she went to pick up Gotham by Midnight was DC Bombshells #1, sort of an alternate history Elseworlds take on the 1940s. And I guess these characters started as variant covers, and then they became statues, or maybe vice versa. But now they have their own comic book. So, of course, the art is great. The aesthetics are great. This first issue basically introduces the characters of Batwoman, Wonder Woman, and Power Girl. Maggie Sawyer is there as well. But those three characters are all in separate stories all across the world, as a matter of fact. So I imagine they'll join together in issue 2 or issue 3. I certainly hope so. This one was a buck more than the prior ones I mentioned. This one was a $3.99 book. But it had something like 26 or 28 pages of story. So that's a reasonable trade-off, I guess. And as I gush about how much I'm enjoying these DCU books, the reports of DC Comics' financial crisis is still pretty fresh, and I wonder how many months I'll have this many new books to talk about. I suspect it won't be long. The books that Emily and I tend to read are not DC's bestsellers, so I won't be surprised to hear if any or all of the books that I've mentioned in the prior few minutes will end up on the chopping block at some point in the near future. I'll be disappointed. Can't say I'd be surprised. Let's take a break here, play a promo or two for podcasts that are almost as good as the ones here at Relatively Geeky, or in some cases, maybe a little bit better. And when we come back, I'll talk about some discount bin shopping I did last month, of course, as well as the graphic novels and trade paperbacks I read.
Hello, ladies. Listen to your man. Now listen to me. Now listen to your man. Now listen to me. Sadly, he isn't me. But if he stopped downloading lame-ass podcasts and switched to Two True Freaks, he could learn to sound like me. Look down. Back up. Where are you? You're on the Enterprise with a man your man could sound like. What's in your hand? Back at me. I have it. It's a long box filled with comics that you love. Look again. The comics are now episodes. Anything is possible when your man listens to Two True Freaks and not lame asses. I'm on a tauntaun.
Do you like oversized comics? Comics with extended page counts like DC's 80-page Giants, 100-page Super Spectaculars, and Dollar Comics Giants? Or how about Marvel's king-size annuals, giant-size specials, and double-sized issues? How about the physically larger Treasury comics? then welcome to the King Size Comics Giant Size Fun podcast. Join me, your host, Kyle Benning, on a one-man mission to brave the elements and review oversized comics in my car during my lunch hour.
And we're back. First up, the cheap books I read this month, which were mostly cheap books that I also bought this month. I visited a comic shop near my dad's house when I visited him in mid-August. They have a nice discount bin, and I grabbed a few from there for the quarter bin database, but also grabbed two just as reading copies, and then to do a little Johnny Appleseeding with them as well. I mentioned last episode that I'm building a stack of comics to send out to the Comics Corps of Canada, but I also like leaving comics around in public places for folks to pick up, or quite likely to throw out, but I can't control that. I read Marvel Tales 276, which involved a teenage kid trying to be like his idol Spider-Man, even building Doc Ock-style tentacles to give himself spider legs. Spidey sets the kid straight, but not before he is heroic and even gets a new girlfriend. A fun one-and-done story, but not one I need to keep in the collection. I left that one in the Charlotte Airport by one of the rocking chairs that's near the area in the food court. I mean, I doubt it's still there, so... I also grabbed a copy of a Richie Rich comic, issue 7 from the 1991 run from Harvey Comics. It was exactly what you'd expect from a Richie Rich comic. Exactly like the ones I read when I was a kid. These may have been reprints from comics decades before, for all I know. But it was mostly pleasant and occasionally funny. That one I left in the magazine rack at a doctor's office. I previously had left a copy of a Star Trek comic there, but last time I was there, I saw that it was gone. So I replaced it with this one. But the superstar pick of the lot when I visited Carolina Comics and More was a pretty beaten-up copy of DC Superstars 8, part of the DC Superstars of Space collection. I'm not going to go into details here because I'm hoping to gently and subtly pressure Kyle Benning into having me back on King Size Comics Giant Size Fun to talk about it. We did talk about issue 2 a while back, so it's not a stretch to think he'd want to talk about this one too. Right, Kyle? So, no spoilers. On the off chance that I do talk about it later on a show, Kyle's, or somewhere else, but the issue featured reprint stories of Adam Strange, of course, the Space Ranger, and the Star Rovers. And even at a 700% markup on its cover price, I know, what was I thinking? It got me more than 40 pages of actual comic book story for about the price of what 20 pages will run you these days. That stack for Canada that I mentioned before did get some new books added to it this month, both from Half Price Books and In the Ballpark. That's the store that has the store-wide quarter bin sales every 3 months and has provided probably, I don't know, 3/4 of the books for the quarter bin database. So this month, I bought 2 Bugs Bunny comics and a Betty and Veronica from there. And they were fine in their way, but predictable. They passed the time, and I hope the kids in the hospital will agree. But the superstar of this batch of the family-friendly books was Billy Batson and the Magic of Shazam. This is the sort of spiritual follow-up to the Jeff Smith story, the Monster Society of Evil, with different creators. This was just the first issue. And it was an absolute blast, and somehow, weirdly, was able to remain true to the Captain Marvel mythos and style. The art was appropriately cartoony or kid-friendly, sort of maybe a Powerpuff Girls vibe. But again, just an overall fun read. The story did end on a cliffhanger of sorts, leading right into issue 2. This is not an official quarter bin recommendation, but just between us, it was well worth the 25 cents or 3 for $1 or whatever low amount of cash I paid for it. And last up, trades and graphic novels that I read. At some point in the recent past, we acquired the 4 issues of War of the Gods. This miniseries had a bunch of tie-ins, but even without those, I was pretty well able to follow the story. George Perez put into these issues batches and batches of panels and tons of dialogue, and these were each double-sized issues. So maybe I missed a little content by not having the tie-ins, but having read this, this seems like one of those events where the bulk of the critical action beats pretty much take place in the main title. The main plot of the story is that Circe wants to lead all the ancient gods into war against each other. Roman gods, Greek, Egyptian, Norse, Babylonian, Thanagarian, and African. And they go up against any heroes who try to stand in their way. Circe's goal is to destroy the earth goddess Gaia. The embarrassing part is that I can't exactly remember where we got these books from. Emily may well have bought them. Probably from cheap bins, or maybe they were sent to us by a friendly listener. I really don't remember. I'm pretty good with taking pictures of books that listeners are nice enough to send us, so I can then thank and know who sent them. So, like I said, I just don't remember. So, a general thanks to our generous listeners, and a specific thanks if we in fact got these from a listener. If someone wants to take credit, just let us know. I mentioned in a prior episode that our local library branch had a couple of hardcover X-Files collections. There was a bit of confusion among listeners, or at least a lack of clarity on my part, perhaps. So let me clarify. These are the Topps issues, but the hardcovers are branded X-Files Classics and put out by IDW. So I read the second hardcover, which contains issues 10 through 19, and the one-half issue that was part of a giveaway or some collection somewhere. In general, I like these, although, like I said when I talked about Volume 1, Scully's hair color changes page to page, sometimes panel to panel. But what I liked was that these stories had a nice variety of length, from one part, two part, and three part. This variety was nice, as we know from reading comics, that not every story deserves the six-issue trade treatment that they tend to get these days, or even a three-issue arc. And this at least gives the impression of tailoring the story to a certain number of issues, or vice versa. Now, these ones are out of continuity from the TV series, and so they tend to be Monster of the Week style of stories. But they are trying to develop their own little mythology and little conspiracies, both of which, again, are separate from the original series. Now, Topps did, in fact, do some actual adaptations of actual first-season episodes. But again, the ones that I'm reading, the ones that I'm referring to, are from the out-of-continuity series. And like I said, pretty much enjoying them, although you need to remember that I'm reading them from the library. So my only cost is time. That brings me to the last books I want to talk about, which are three trades of Strange Haven, collecting the 18 issues of Gary Spencer Millage's black and white indie comic. He started the book in 1995, and these 18 issues showed up over the next 10 years, and it earned an Eisner nomination in 1997. I received the three trades that contain these issues in the mail from one of my favorite listeners ever, the aforementioned Canadian Rob Lance. Rob is affiliated with a great store in Ontario, Comic Connection. If there was anything he had to promote, believe me, I would gladly promote it. I will point out it was through Rob that I became aware of the existence of the aforementioned Comics Corps of Canada. Before sending these off to me, Rob asked if I was familiar with it and asked if I would be interested. They're black and white independents, like I said, so certainly they may not be everybody's cup of tea. But I started reading the description of the series on Wikipedia, and I thought to myself that it seemed like a mashup of The Prisoner and Twin Peaks. And then a few paragraphs later on Wikipedia, I read that Millage included in his list of inspirations The Prisoner and Twin Peaks. So at least I was on the right track. The story sounds simple enough. A newcomer arrives in town, and the town does not want him to leave. Not that the townsfolk don't want him to leave. I mean, the town itself seems to have a bit of a will of its own, and the town doesn't want him to leave for some reason. Things slowly get stranger and stranger as we learn that there's a secret society trying to take over control of the town of Strangehaven. We learn that there are powerful ley lines that run through Strangehaven, and even if you plot lines between major cultural and religious locations around the world, those lines meet in Strangehaven. It is a place so powerful that were the secret society able to take over the town, that would be a major step towards them taking over the world. Millage populates the story with interesting and occasionally bizarre characters and situations. He does the writing and the art, and I have to say that one of the issues I often have with black and white books is the lack of color clues that help me keep the character straight. You don't realize how important hair color or clothing color is in avoiding character confusion until you don't have that as a crutch. But Millage does a really good job at portraying these various characters as different people. They really look different from one another. I rarely had to flip back to figure out who a particular character was. And there was a bit of photorealism in some shots, and some other various art techniques, I guess, that help in maintaining the sense that this book sort of takes place in our reality, but not totally. I will give you one warning. As I said, there's not been a new issue of the comic in 10 years, since issue 18, and the story is not ended. It is not resolved. So if the idea of a story ending on a cliffhanger bothers you, maybe even ending forever on a cliffhanger, be warned. But if you're okay in principle with that, and if the black and white doesn't bother you, I would recommend picking this one up if you see it out in the wild. It was self-published, so you may very well never see it out in the wild. I don't think I ever have. But you never know. And I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, the nostalgia factor of DC Superstars of Space 8 is pretty hard to beat, and the family fun of Billy Batson was a blast. But maybe the total sweep of Strangehaven, the three trades, the 18 issues taken as a whole, that's probably my favorite overall read for the month. And now, the news you've been waiting for. I have heard from the network bigwigs, and we have been renewed. We've been promised a 12-month run, and as we all know, when the subject has anything to do with comic books, when a publisher, network, gives a long-term commitment to a certain number of episodes, it is an ironclad guarantee. The network did say something about taking 2 months to move their offices across the country, but if you think about it, that makes absolutely no sense. But I'm pretty confident that we'll have an episode next month. Should be out the first week of October. Feel free to let me know what you think of this episode, what you think of any of these books that I mentioned, especially if you've read any of them. You can do that via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook or blog post for this episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. Thanks for listening. Keep the pages turning. That's actually starting to grow on me.